through. The show is flying as it normally does. And I suppose, since nothing's blown up yet here at 107.5 The Fan in Green Bay, that I'm doing this right. I guess producer Jay would tell me, although he said a little while ago that the show sounded great and I didn't sound delirious. And I said, are you lying to me? And he said, no, I wouldn't do that. And I said, yes, you surely would, because you would want me to be encouraged. And he said, well, I would, but I'm not doing it right now. So I don't know what that means.
Everything's
just trust
great.
Me. I'm not lying right this second, but I would if I had to preserve your feelings. No, no, don't be one of those friends. So, yes, we are on the road, or I am on the road in Green Bay. Jay is at CBS Sports Radio headquarters after attending Sunday Night Football at Lambeau and getting the full Monty, so to speak, of what it's like to be at Lambeau and actually on the field for the end of the first half and then on through halftime. And the alumni were getting introduced. More than 78,300 fans at Lambeau, and they were loud. I can understand why it has the reputation that it does. Even though the Packers still haven't played a complete game, but a 21-point fourth quarter and then a goal line, 21-point second quarter and a goal line stand in the second half got them all kinds of fired up. So Packers are able to even their record at 1-1, and I shared some photos with you on Twitter as well as on Facebook, and I appreciate that so many of you are writing and responding, and a lot of you want to know whether or not Leroy Butler gave me the signed Hall of Fame jersey that he promised me. Now, I thought he was joking, actually. I thought he was playing around with me because he didn't think that I would actually find him at Lambeau, but I promised him that I would. And I started texting him when I first got to Lambeau. So he was at an alumni party offsite at a local, I think he said it was a local brewery. And then he said, we're going to be in a suite hanging out to watch the first half of the game. So I'm texting him during the first half and asking him what suite he's in and where I can come and find him. And he said, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll find you in the third quarter after you get done with your responsibilities at halftime. But as it turned out then, they were leaving that one particular suite and he was walking around, I think being walked around by Packers PR and Packers game day relations. And he was stopping in different suites to shake hands and meet other fans. And so he was going to be on the move. So the only place that I could find him where he was going to be stationary was down in the corner before underneath the stadium before they went out on the field at halftime and got introduced to the crowd. And I took a video. Boy, he was in his element. His first time being introduced as a Hall of Famer. And he was in his element. You know, Leroy, he's always got a smile on his face, as we talked about last week when he joined the show. And so I did track him down. We did take a selfie at his suggestion. And he did tell me, your jersey is up in the suite. And I said, I care more about meeting you than I do about getting the jersey. And he said, oh, that's sweet. And I said, it's true. It's true. I really just wanted to meet him. And so he swears that he's going to ship the jersey on Monday. And actually, he tweeted me that, too, after telling me in person. So it's there on Twitter, which must mean it's true. No, I mean, the man's got a lot going on. I certainly understand if the jersey doesn't get shipped right away. And I honestly don't need him to do that. But it was very kind of him to say that. And he also said there was a little mini helmet that he was sending too. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens and when it shows up. But I definitely will share the photos because, as I said, some of you are asking whether or not I got that signed jersey that he promised. I thought he was teasing, but no, he was being genuine and real, and he's the best. I mean, he might be my favorite. And this is saying something because we interview a bunch of Hall of Famers on the show, but he might be my favorite because he's kind of adopted us on After Hours. We are live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can. We are passing around mortification as Sunday morphs, pun intended, into a Monday. And so we've got a poll up on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Who deserves the most Monday mortification? It's quite the poll, actually. And we're getting a lot of responses on Twitter. But you're also blowing up our Facebook page with all the reasons why this team or that team should be the most mortified. And the poll, actually, it's right now, it's kind of an impressive race among the four teams that we've given you as the candidates. Some of you are writing in votes. And in fact, I just saw a write-in vote for the San Francisco 49ers. This is tough. We had talked about this actually with the Pittsburgh Steelers in week number one because they were able to come away with a victory, but it was very pricey. They lose TJ Watt. For a while there, they thought they were going to lose Najee Harris as well. And so the defense is not the same without the defensive player of the year in TJ Watt. And now you get a similar situation with the 49ers, though on the offensive side of the ball, where yes, they come up with a win, but it also comes with a steep price tag.
Second down, Ray goes in motion, now lines up to the right of Trey in the shotgun. Long snap, it's a handoff to Ray. No, Trey kept it. Beautifully done by Trey Lance. He's so good, like Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, at holding it at the mesh point. But Ray took it wide, Trey's down.
Yep.
Trey's on his back as he took the handoff there, and Trey Lance
Willis
is hurt.
Hit him, and it's not good. He tried to get up, and then immediately you could see by his body language there is an issue, and he went straight back down to his back. The trainer's working on him now.
Well, Jimmy Garoppolo begins to warm up on the sideline. The irony is last year against Seattle in early October, Jimmy got hurt, and Trey came in to play his first meaningful snaps. Trey Lance flat on his back, and Jimmy Garoppolo warming up on the sidelines.
Man, there's so much happening, right? When this takes place, when it transpires on a field, it's next man up. It has to be. And Jimmy Garoppolo is very familiar to the Niners, to their fans there in Santa Clara in the Bay Area. But what a devastating blow for the second-year QB. And Kyle Shanahan's even said he's a rookie, essentially. He's taking over for the first time. They had all the confidence in him, in his athletic ability, in the way that he's developed and learned. The relationship between Trey and Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be beneficial. And then in the first quarter, late first quarter, he breaks his ankle, and he has to be carted off. He's ruled out even before they know exactly what's happened, but he was in a ton of pain, and Kyle Shanahan said after the game that he knew right away that this was a serious injury, a serious and significant injury. So Jimmy Garoppolo makes his first appearance of the season, and right away has a couple of touchdown drives in the second quarter, and it's good for Jimmy. I'm happy for him because he's handled all of this business, all of the uncertainty. He's handled with such professionalism, with such class. I've said over and over again that there's such a distinct difference between the way that he has handled his business and the way, say, Baker Mayfield handled his business. The fact that Garoppolo still has the trust and the confidence of his teammates, it speaks volumes. And so to see him come out on the field, to see him settle into that rhythm right away, the smile on his face, the appreciation of his teammates. I'm not sure there could be a better situation with a backup QB. It just sucks that it comes at the expense of a season-ending injury for Trey Lance. But we know that is a part of football, and Garoppolo is trained and waited, and he's also rehabbed an injury to be ready for this.
Here's a play action by Garoppolo. Looks left, and a throw wide open. Ross Dwelly. He'll take it 5. Ross Dwelly will dive for the end zone. Touchdown! San Francisco! Welcome back, Jimmy Garoppolo! 4th and goal, 1 yard line up 20-7. They break the huddle. Jimmy's going to go under center. They got Debo and Warner right, Jennings and Ayuk left. Jennings goes in motion right. Jimmy going to sneak it off the left side. Touchdown! San Francisco!
Jimmy Garoppolo caps a 13-play, 7-minute drive with his 1-yard touchdown run. That's late in the fourth quarter, and we get that 27-7 final. Greg Papa on Niners radio. The only Seattle touchdown. Now, remember what happened on Monday Night Football where Geno Smith led this really impressive couple of drives in the first half, and you all know what happened at the end of the game with the Denver Broncos, but we had the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, raving about Geno Smith. The only touchdown in week 2 comes on a block field goal. So Tariq Woolen has the block. Michael Jackson scoops it up and goes 86 yards. So it's a special team score because there was no offense. There were three Seattle turnovers. So Geno Smith is not bad in the game. He throws an interception, just they're not productive. They go up and down the field, really, and kind of accumulate a bunch of yards, but are not able to punch it into the end zone. Meanwhile, for Garoppolo, 13 of 21 for 154 yards, and to score, helped a ton by the run game. The team nearly rushed for 200 yards. The smile on his face, even though, as you understand, both he and Shanahan and everybody else feel terrible for Trey Lance.
Just like riding a bike, yeah. I was felt good to be back out there. Just feel terrible for Trey. I've been on that side of it. This league is tough, and you know, everyone has their share of injuries, but that sucks for him. And feel bad for him, but he's our brother, and you know, we'll pick him up. I saw him for a quick second after, just wishing him well. Like I said, I've been there. I come full circle in this thing, and it's tough whenever you see a guy get hurt. You feel for him, but Trey's a tough dude. He'll be all right.
It's tough. You feel for someone so bad. It's very, it's a sad moment. But you don't have time to sit there and think about it. You got to get right back to the game. And I thought the guys did a real good job of that. But and we were real happy about the win. But it was a little sombering once you get in the locker room and you see him and stuff. So. Yes. Yeah. He's doing as good as you can. You know, when I went out and saw him, he was just asking me about a couple of the plays before. Asked about some of his reads and stuff. So it's the type of kid he is, and I'm hurting for him.
So Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo, but they get the win. And the 49ers, who went through this whole process during the offseason of saying over and over that they were going to trade Garoppolo, right? Over and over that they would have traded him had it not been for the fact that he had shoulder surgery and had to rehab. They even kept him from practicing in training camp and preseason because they were still sure that he was not going to be a part of the team. And then they got to the point where they were going to have to cut him because there were no takers. There were no teams out there that were willing to give up any assets for Garoppolo, considering that the Niners were kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. And so they restructure his contract. And guess what? He's got a ton of incentives built into this contract. Should he start? Should he play a certain number of games? They make the postseason. You don't have to love Jimmy Garoppolo as a quarterback. He's not elite, right? We know what he is. Trey Lance is higher risk, higher reward because of his athleticism and the power. Jimmy Garoppolo is more of a steady Eddie. And yeah, he's going to make mistakes and he's going to cough up the football. But what happens when Garoppolo plays? The Niners win. That is proven. There's a track record with Garoppolo as the Niners QB, even though it may not be as flashy. A Super Bowl appearance, another NFC Championship game last year. Maybe he can only take you so far, but Garoppolo is still a veteran option. And the team loves him. They play for him, and they know what they have with him. So the Niners move to 1-1. The Seahawks fall to 1-1. The Super Bowl champion Rams in that same NFC West, they appear to have quite the healthy lead at home against the Atlanta Falcons until Marcus Mariota and those Falcons find themselves a nice rhythm.
So here is the first punt of the day of Syracuse's Riley Dixon in his 99th career game. Former 7th round pick, and it's blocked. Anderson blocked it.
Go with it.
It is scooped up, and Lorenzo Carter scores the Atlanta touchdown. Here's Stafford with 3 to the right, 2 to the boundary at the left. Takes the snap, Atlanta bringing 3. Stafford across the middle, caught, cup, and it's not knocked out. And the scramble for the ball, and it's scooped up by Darren Hall. Hall recovers the fumble after Kupp had it punched loose. And Atlanta's got it in plus territory with 3:22 to go.
We nearly had another one of these wild and wacky and completely improbable, unlikely comebacks. In fact, the Rams would have been a candidate for our Monday mortification. So you have this kind of series of mistakes by the Rams. Stafford interception leads to an Atlanta touchdown. Then there's the block punt that you hear on Falcons radio. It's recovered by Lorenzo Carter with 5 minutes to go. It's returned for a touchdown. And now it's 31-25. So Atlanta has got the ball and is driving into the red zone. Marcus Mariota, he's feeling large and in charge.
31-25, Rams with the lead, trying to protect it on defense. Third down, 13 from the 24 of the Rams to the Falcons. Mariota has a knee-high snap. Rams send five. They hit Mariota. Throw goes up. It is intercepted at the goal line. Jalen Ramsey out to the 20 and out of bounds to the Rams bench. Jalen calls game in week two for the Rams.
Jalen Ramsey was a fairly popular scapegoat or fairly popular target for criticism after the Rams-Bills game in the season opener. He did not play well, and he was salty after the game. But this was a redeeming moment for Jalen Ramsey. 1:07 to go. It's not just an interception. He leaps up over the intended target and grabs the ball above the receiver on the goal line. And so Mariota throws that interception, but honestly, this was Jalen Ramsey induced. And with just over a minute left, the Rams are able to preserve this win and not fall into this category of Monday mortification. Matthew Stafford, 3 touchdowns, but he does have 2 interceptions. And Cooper Kupp, over 100 yards receiving. He has a couple of scores, but man, that fumble that really sparked this, well, gave the Falcons extra opportunities. Unbelievable. The fact that the Falcons were able to capitalize and nearly come all the way back. But a win is a win is a win is a win.
I'll take them any way I can get them. I'll take take a peek at the film, find ways to be better. There's no question about it. We can do it in all three phases. Seen a lot of ball, been a lot of, you know, part of a lot of games. That was definitely an interesting one at the end. Probably not the craziest I've been a part of, but you know what happens. And this is NFL football. It's hard to win.
That one, man, are there so many things that we can clean up. But I'll tell you what, haven't been doing this that long, but I've been doing it long enough to know you never take a win for granted in this league. It's too difficult to come by. We're going to have our eyes up. We're going to move forward the right way. I'm really proud of the resilience that I saw from this group and a lot of things that we created, some of our own adversity. But you credit the Falcons and Coach Smith's unit for being able to kind of just make enough plays to stay in it. We had too many turnovers, too many things that we didn't capitalize on, but we found a way to be able to get it done. And I thought...
Which, should I wait for his next thought? And I thought, oh, and then we're done listening. Thank you, Sean McVay. We're good. We gave him the hook.
Run it back! Run it back!
And I thought, run it back! Producer Jay, what happened there? Why did we cut off poor Sean McVay?
Something's wrong with you.
Not with me, with you.
I think he was talking to me.
Talking in the middle of a sentence. He was talking to you?
Yeah, I think he was talking to me on that one.
Oh, are you actually going to fall on the sword on this one?
Yeah, I'll take that one.
Impressive. Very impressive. Okay. So if you look at the NFC West, and we knew that this was likely to be a tough division based on last year and based on the changes. I don't know how many people thought that the Seattle Seahawks would have a win after these first couple of weeks, but every single team in the West Division is sitting at 1-1. It's going to be that kind of a year. In the NFC North, if the Eagles beat the Vikings on Monday night, every team in that division will be sitting at 1-1. I mean, we're not even through 2 weeks yet, and already it's nutty and chaotic and hectic as all get out. So we've got a poll up because we're dishing out some Monday mortification. Who deserves the most mortification? Who should be the most mortified on this Monday? On Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. And you know, misery loves company, so let's commiserate together, shall we? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence from our Green Bay affiliate, 107.5 The Fan and AM 1400. Thanks for hanging out with us on this mortified Monday on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
two out of the three, third down. Shotgun formation, dropping is Trevor, looking, fires middle of the field, caught by Christian Kirk, leans toward the end zone, touchdown! A 10-yard touchdown pass from Trevor Lawrence to Christian Kirk, and the Jaguars strike first. The 37-yard line, they run it with James Robinson, James into the open field, 30, inside of 30, inside the 20, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown! James Robinson exploded and extended the lead for Jacksonville. The Jags lead 17-0. They have a 4th-and-1 on the 5-yard line of the Colts. 22 seconds to play in the third. Trevor under center. Play fake. Trevor's going to run to the right. He's going to toss it to Christian Kirk for the touchdown! Touchdown pass from Trevor Lawrence to Christian Kirk.
It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This may be Trevor Lawrence's best performance as an NFL QB, and this may be an even worse look for the Indianapolis Colts than what we saw in Week 18 last season when they did not beat the Jaguars with a playoff spot on the line. I don't know. You tell me. Is this worse? And do the Colts deserve more Monday mortification than any of the other teams who suffered the embarrassing collapses? The Colts do not score at all. As in nothing. Even the Seahawks had a touchdown on the board today. Not the Colts. Nada. Zilch. Mortified. You can find the poll up on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence from Green Bay, Wisconsin, following Sunday Night Football. So Trevor Lawrence only misses on 3 passes in the first half, and the offense is efficient. And as you hear there on Jaguars radio, they're able to score early and often. 3 of 4 drives, nearly 200 total yards in that first half. And then early in the third quarter, we see Christian Kirk with another touchdown catch, his second. I saw somebody tweeting about how he's worth every penny of the money that they paid him. I don't know, Producer Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't that start out the free agent spending and the trade market going wild with wide receivers? Wasn't Christian Kirk one of the first?
He completely broke the market. Destroyed it.
The Jaguars are certainly happy they have him. But it's not just the offense, because the defense picks off Matt Ryan on back-to-back drives in the fourth quarter. And so there are no turnovers by the Jaguars offense. That's a start. They go 6 of 15 on third down. That's also huge. And Trevor Lawrence ultimately finishes 25 of 30. For 230 yards and a couple of touchdowns. But they get 64 yards from James Robinson. And as I say, the defense makes life miserable for Matt Ryan. He throws 3 interceptions in total, gets sacked 5 times, and the Jaguars also hit him another 11 times. And so even with a Jonathan Taylor, who was probably the top pick in most or many fantasy football drafts, they cannot find much traction on offense. And this is a Jaguars banner day.
I think it just confirms, you know, what we're doing here, what we're building, the people we have, coaches and players included. And I think that's really it. I mean, it confirms that we're on the right track. We're where we want to be. And like I said, you just got to take it week by week and keep getting better. I mean, if we win this game and go and lay an egg the rest of the season, doesn't really matter. So we got to keep getting better, and I'm confident we will. But it really does just confirm what we're doing. And I got a lot of faith in the coaches and our players, and just proud of, like I said, the way we executed. And it's fun when it comes together, and it was awesome.
That's something that I've been very proud of this group, and how they've been able to take the mistakes from a week ago and you know, sort of minimize them going into this week and really – attacking the game plan and really just attacking their job.
So the Jaguars, crazy enough, are the only team in the AFC South with a win. The Texans are 0-1-1. Remember, they tied the Colts in week number 1. That was nutty. So now the Houston Texans and the Indianapolis Colts have the ties. So they technically are tied, fittingly enough, for second place in the division. And the Titans are 0-1, but they play against the Bills on Monday night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. This is brutal for the Colts. And producer Jay, remind us what your week one overreaction was.
Week one overreaction was that Frank Reich might be in over his head, and I don't know if he's the guy for the job in Indianapolis.
Huh. Well, I scoffed at that because I think that's completely ridiculous. But tell you what, to get completely shut out, as in manhandled and embarrassed and mortified by the Jaguars, certainly doesn't help his cause.
You know, we knew coming into it, it's a good pass rush team. Understand the ball has to come out, and, you know, I've got to do my part that way. And then, you know, make good decisions with the football, too, even when there is pressure. I mean, that's part of playing this position. I feel like the preparation's been, you know, pretty good. I think we all have to take a hard look in the mirror, find ways to individually be better so collectively we can be better. And, you know, that's what we'll get back to work on tomorrow.
Rough day. Credit to Jacksonville. They outplayed us, outcoached us. We'll learn from it. We'll get better. We'll pick ourselves up off the mat. It's early in the season. Obviously, a very poor showing in every way.
That's Frank Reich's assessment. A very poor showing in every way. And just to recap, again, Matt Ryan's day. 3 interceptions, 5 sacks, and 11 quarterback hits. So it's not like it was all his fault. I mean, he's not a mobile quarterback. So the offensive line's got to give him a little bit of time. But I mean, the Jaguars defense was able to corral Jonathan Taylor for the most part. He only had 9 carries for 54 yards. Now, granted, once you fall into a hole, you're trying to throw the ball more often, which then lends itself to the defense being able to cheat in coverage because they know what's coming and the interceptions. But man, there isn't a highlight in this game for the Indianapolis Colts. And right now, so I'm only looking at the Twitter poll at this point, but the Colts have nearly 39% of your vote in our poll. It's got many hours left. Which team should be the most mortified on Monday morning, waking up with what is a Sunday hangover, if you will? We've given you Colts, Browns, Raiders, Ravens. Now, all 4 are getting a healthy number of votes, but right now the Colts are in the lead. I'll have to check Facebook as well. So either one, Twitter or Facebook. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence from Green Bay, 107.5 The Fan, our Green Bay affiliate. Good to be taking the show on the road again for the first time since the Super Bowl in Miami in early 2020. Is it just like riding a bike? Well, we'll see. I got a couple of nights to figure this out.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Lot of talk about the Saints hosting the Bucks because Tom Brady with the Buccaneers has not had any kind of success in New Orleans. And that was one of the nationally televised games on Sunday, week 2. Now, remember, the Buccaneers had just 1 touchdown in the game against Dallas that was at Arlington Stadium, Sunday Night Football, in week 1, where the Saints were able to rally in a crazy way, almost like what we saw in week 2 all over the place, to get a victory against the Falcons. And so you have 2 teams coming in this game, into this game from completely different directions, and also that kind of shadow cast over Tampa Bay. We just haven't had success in New Orleans since Tom Brady became the starting quarterback and took over for Jameis Winston. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. If you took the over in terms of total points in this one, oh dear, the offense was hard to come by. I mean, gross for a good portion of this game. I was watching this one live. There's an early fumble on a snap by Tom Brady. There's a failed 4th-and-1. There's a couple of punts. He's throwing tablets on the sidelines. He's visibly frustrated and angry. I mean, the Saints had a 3-0 lead at halftime. 3-0. That's it.
You suck, Brady.
And then early in the fourth quarter, there is a big scramble. Did you guys catch this? I mean, generally, you'll see guys pushing and shoving when it comes to rivalry games or division games, but this was next level. There are pushes, there are shoves. Brady just wanted to hit somebody. I mean, that's all he wanted. He wants somebody to hit. He was definitely looking to hit somebody. And so he's getting in the face of, I think it was Marshawn Lattimore. Bruce Arians, no longer the coach, a special consultant, is jawing from the sideline as well. Well, Mike Evans decides he needs to protect his quarterback. In fact, if you haven't seen the video, there's actually a video out there on social media in which, if you read lips, you can see Mike Evans say to the officials, "It's Tom Brady. What you want me to do?" Meaning, like, Tom Brady had somebody get after him, get in his face. I got to protect my quarterback. And so Mike Evans comes flying in past Brady, tackles Marshawn Lattimore. They both get ejected. This is early in the fourth quarter. And Evans, of course, is protesting. The fans are livid because they can't believe Lattimore got ejected. But really, those two have been going back and forth. It was getting heated between those two anyway. And the Tom Brady jawing was really just the match that kind of lit the kindle and set the whole thing ablaze. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Oh, producer Jay, he's pulling a rabbit out of the hat and tells me he's got the play-by-play of the fight. Let's hear it. I can't wait to hear it.
Third down and 6 instead of a first down. Shotgun look, Brady. Here's the snap, four-man rush, throws the ball deep. Downfield has a receiver in the area. There's contact and no flag. Whoa. So Miller was on a go route down that far sideline.
Yeah, Scotty Miller got grabbed and pushed out of bounds. And I don't know how you don't call that one. He had a hold by the jersey.
Marshawn Lattimore was covering and he grabbed the jersey.
There's a fight.
Two flags
Marshawn
are thrown.
Lattimore and Evans.
Lattimore and Evans. Now you got a bunch of Buccaneers around the 45-yard line. This happened before the Bucs. Well, there's more players on the field now than you're allowed to have.
Yeah, there's going to be some ejections.
Yeah, two flags.
Mike Evans came and laid a shot on Lattimore again.
Mike was thrown out of a game in this dome early in his career.
There were offsetting personal fouls on each team. Number 23 for New Orleans and number 13 for Tampa Bay. Both number 23 and number 13 have been disqualified from the game. Those fouls offset. It's fourth down.
I told you the fans in New Orleans did not like it. That's the play-by-play from Gene Deckerhoff and company on Bucs Radio. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. So that happens to be on a third down. The Buccaneers turn around and punt and give the ball to the Saints. Again, no offense, brutally challenging to come up with any chunk plays or big yardage plays or sustained drives. Well, things get interesting right after that because we've seen this Jameis Winston before, just not in a long while.
Bucks need to reach the 23-yard line. The line of scrimmage is the 28, so call it third down 5. Good snap to Brady. Brady looking, throws the ball toward the right corner. It's caught! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Buccaneers, Rashad Perriman. What a throw by Brady, and the Bucs lead for the first time of the game. Here they go again, tempo mode, dropping to throw. Winston out of the gun, throws to the left. It's intercepted at the 35, outside the numbers to the 40, to the 35, to the 30, to the 25, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Mike Edwards, touchdown, Tampa Bay. That's the dagger, my friend. Four takeaways by the Bucs, and Tampa Bay gets a pick 6.
Yeah, that was really the exclamation point. A 68-yard pick 6 with Mike Edwards, and Jameis Winston comes unraveled. So, yeah, there's a little bit of offense in there for the Buccaneers, but the defense really sparks this win. 3 interceptions by Jameis in the fourth quarter. And even though the Buccaneers have only managed a couple of offensive touchdowns, and by a couple, I do mean 2. 2 offensive touchdowns in 2 weeks for the Bucs. Brady is angry, frustrated, throwing things. Actually, he lights up when he talks about the defense, because that is what has the Buccaneers 2-0.
It's an emotional game, so I don't think that's, you know, I think a little better execution helps all the way around. Defense played great again. Line fought hard. All the guys that were in there fought hard. Really tough team, really well coached. Team we really struggle with, so it feels good to win. Defense was awesome. Forced, you know, some disguise and came up with the plays. You know, Diener made some great interceptions. Mike, obviously, was a play of the game, so they played awesome.
We got to clean up a few things, and we got some new guys over there. I think they're coming. They're doing a good job managing the ball game. Our objective is to win. You know, our points are going to come. I'm not worried about that. The chemistry will come. We got to win in the process. These first four or five games, while we figure out who we are.
Todd Bowles taking over as the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and did inherit Tom Brady. But man alive, not only did Brady tell us, I'm 45, I got a lot of bleep going on, but if you pay any attention to People Magazine, Elle Magazine, any of the websites that deal with pop culture and entertainment, well, all of the speculation around Brady has nothing to do with his retirement as much as it has to do with his marriage. And, I mean, there are even reports of his wife walking in New York by herself, sobbing on a cell phone, and people trying to guess who she's talking to. So, please, don't believe everything that you hear or read, but certainly this is a challenging time for Tom Brady. And one of the reasons he came back is because he felt like they had a really good team, a team that could win. So far, though, we're seeing the championship defense and the offense is stop and start. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. As for the New Orleans Saints, I mean, this is a game where they never really found a rhythm. And then Jameis Winston and the offense implode there in the fourth quarter.
The most important thing is, like, our team fought our tail off. Defense played a great game. Offensively, we just got to get better on third downs and protect the football. Myself, I have to get better on third downs and protect the football.
It takes the ball away is the team that wins, and we were on the other end of that. You know, so we got to do a better job of protecting the ball and giving ourselves a chance to win the game.
So Dennis Allen taking over as the head coach, of course, with Sean Payton, whether it's interim, whether it's not interim. And Jameis Winston, if you remember, in his last season with the Buccaneers, he had 30 touchdowns, but also 30 interceptions. Wasn't that the, I'm pretty sure that's what the numbers were. I mean, he had some dynamic plays and some dynamic games, but it was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It was either all or nothing. And we know, even going back to his days at Florida State, that there was an interception problem, that he really threw a ton of interceptions. And so this was the kind of Jameis Winston quarter that, you know, you hope only happens once in a blue moon, but it's certainly always a possibility. And so for the NFC South, when you think about the other divisions we've talked about, where in the West you've got every team at 1-1. In the North, if the Vikings lose on Monday, every team in that division will be at 1-1. Well, the Buccaneers are at 2-0, but have not played great football on the offensive side, at least. The Saints are now at 1-1, so sitting there in second place. The Panthers, actually, when they hosted the Browns to start the season, it was all about Baker Mayfield against his former team. So I kind of felt like week two was when the work really began, right? When they could settle into a little more anonymity. And I'm not saying that nobody knows who they are and is paying attention, but the spotlight and the microscope on them because of Baker Mayfield versus the Browns in that first week was, it was white hot. And really no opportunity for them to find their rhythm, find their stride. It was, boom, 100 miles per hour right off the top. And so I kind of felt like in week number two, we would maybe see them get a little more comfortable and not have to deal with so much of the craziness swirling around them. And lo and behold, they're on the road against the New York Giants, and it's another game in which the Panthers' offense starts extremely slow. So remember, it was 6 yards in the first quarter of their opening game against the Browns, and Baker Mayfield saw a lot of pressure from his teammates, former teammates, and the defense of, say, Myles Garrett, who had a couple of sacks. Well, at MetLife Stadium against the Giants, this game is tied at 6 at halftime. So there really is another slow start by the Panthers. A pair of early Carolina fumbles lead to field goals for New York. And even though the Panthers' defense is able to limit Saquon Barkley to just 4 first-half yards. How about that? I think he had 6 carries and only 4 first-half yards. So they were keyed on him and making sure that he didn't find any room to run. But it was one step forward, 2 steps back because of the fumbles. So it's a 6-6 game at halftime. You get a touchdown early on from the Panthers in the second half, but the Giants are able to tie it. A 75-yard drive in the third quarter. Daniel Jones finds Daniel Bellinger, and they're knotted at 13. And then through the rest of the way, the only thing that we see for the offense is another pair of fourth-quarter field goals. I mean, that's how the Giants were able to win this game, is to be able to limit Baker Mayfield and the Panthers. And maybe there's some growing pains because they do have a new quarterback, and he's adjusting to a new scheme again, right? Because he's been doing that his entire career. But to see the way that they kind of sputtered again and not really ever finding a comfort zone, and the Giants able to get a pair of Graham Gano field goals there in the fourth quarter. I mean, the Giants are 2-0 for the first time in who knows how long. Producer Jay, 2016. Thank you, Jay. The last time the Giants were 2-0, but the Panthers are 0-2 now, and Baker doesn't even manage 150 yards in this game, though they get 128 from Christian McCaffrey, but they're kind of wasted in this one. So Giants are 2-0, Panthers are 0-2. That's, it's quirky. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.